Hi, and welcome to BJGP Interviews. I'm Nada Khan, one of the associate editors of the BJGP. Thanks for listening to this podcast today. In today's episode, we're speaking to Katharina Savalkul. Katharina is a DPhil student in health economics based at the Nuffield Department of Primary Care Health Sciences at the University of Oxford. We're here today to talk about the paper she's recently published in the BJGP titled Factors Influencing UK Medical Students' Choice of General Practice, a Systematic Review. So, hi Katharina, it's lovely to meet you and to talk about your work. This is a super interesting area to study because we know that there is a push to increase the number of GPs in practice. And I guess that does really start from medical school and people's intentions there. But just to start off, could you talk us through why you decided to do this work and what were you aiming to look at here?
Yeah, of course. So the goal of this piece of research, of the systematic review, was to synthesize the empirical evidence on the factors that influence medical students' GP career intention. Because we know that the general practice is what makes the NHS functions. It handles over 300 million consultations annually, manages the long-term, most long-term conditions, issues over a billion prescriptions per year. And we also know that healthcare systems with strong primary care achieve like better population health in general. But at the same time, right now, the projected shortages for the UK are approximately 15,000 GPs by 2036, which is, of course, a large number and shows like a workforce crisis. And then if we look at the policy responses to this, they've been like quite ambitious, but also largely unsuccessful. So for instance, Health Education England mandated that 50% of all new medical graduates should enter general practice. And this target has never been met. The same goes for the NHS long-term workforce plan to increase GP training places by 50% to 6,000 places in 2031. And the interesting part about this is that the policy responses are all about setting this goal, right? It's about, we're shifting care to the community, we're expanding training places, more medical students should become a GP, but that's all, yeah, setting like these strategies. But at the end, it almost seems like we're achieving the reverse. So that kind of brought me to the question of if we want to, you know, make sure that we have a healthy primary care workforce, that the general practice avoids this large crisis in the future, then maybe instead of like setting these ambitious goals, we should look into the question of what draws medical students to the general practice, and also what are some of the reasons why they might not become a GP. And I think if we zoom into those factors at medical school during medical education, you get a lot more interesting insights that can actually inform more effective policy. So I think that was the reason I conducted this systematic review.
So that's a great summary of what's been going on with GP recruitment in the past little while in terms of policy and the push to increase the number of GPs. And this was, as you mentioned, a systematic review that followed pretty conventional review processes. But I wonder if you could tell us a bit about this bland mirror model. It's a framework used in terms of organizing the results and how this informed how you structured the results.
Yeah, I think it's for this specific research question, looking into like factors that influence decision making, I decided to look up different theoretical frameworks in order to understand this, because decision making at the end of the day is of course like something that's influenced by many things at the same time. And this model specifically, which was I think first published in 1995, helped a lot with like systematically categorizing the findings, because it identified three principal domains. One is the student characteristics, such as like personal values, maybe personality traits. The second one is the specialty characteristics. So what are the professional opportunities? And the third one is like the influences during medical school. And I think if those are the three kind of domains we saw in this, across these like 30 years of research, and I think it was the most useful way to kind of theorize these factors.
Great. So I guess just talk us through what you found, and I suppose it might be helpful to just talk through the different aspects of that model you've just described. So what were the sort of student characteristics that you found in the literature that influenced and informed specialty choice?
Yeah, so I think the findings from this came from different types of studies. I think the largest ones were the ones that used a data set called UK Med, which kind of has the data on all UK medical students in social demographic variables, but also more information about their educational performance at medical school. And I think these studies showed us like the kind of the social demographic individual characteristics that are associated with a higher likelihood of pursuing a career in a general practice. And then there's these smaller studies, which kind of like looked at personal preferences and personality traits. And I think that that's another really interesting question, right? Because about this like specialty choice and like kind of individual preferences, personality traits, a lot of international research is talking about altruism, or do people who enjoy, you know, social contact more, are they more likely to become GPs? And I think this type of research is quite undeveloped in terms of like the UK literature, but it was still interesting to like look at it and compare it to different studies. And I think for the demographic factors, we saw specifically that female students were more likely to choose general practice. Graduates on entry, so age, was another one we saw. Yeah, so there's like these different kind of demographic factors or personality traits that seem to predispose you to a career in a general practice.
And what about the characteristics of the specialty itself or working in general practice specifically that drew some medical students to think about it? So these are potentially medical students looking at GPs and thinking, oh, I want that lifestyle, or I don't, or I want that work, really. Yeah.
On this question, first of all, a lot has changed recently. So I think work-life balance was something that was mentioned in like the earlier studies, but right now it has changed so much that that's almost like not something we can use anymore. But another interesting one, and I think one that we should really take seriously, is that a lot of one of the things that draws students to the general practice is the like long-term patient relationships, so continuity of care. And of course, right now with the landscape changing, and specifically like the prioritization of access over continuity of care, it might be important to kind of, you know, reconsider those changes in light of the fact that a lot of medical students decide on a career in a general practice because of this like continuity of care aspect that's so unique to primary care. So I think that's another really important one.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I think one of the reasons I figured out that general practice was for me was that when I was working in A&E, I would flag all the patients I'd seen and clerked in and then wanted to know what happened in their journey. And I thought, oh, well, I'm not really getting this here in my hospital job in specialty, but maybe that's something I can get in general practice. So as you say, it's a shame that potentially that's something that's being eroded a bit in current general practice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a really, really important one. And that's another study of mine is a very simple survey where I ask more than 1,000 GPs what they found most rewarding about their career. And it's an open text response. And over 45% of respondents wrote down continuity of care. And in a lot of the discussions we have around continuity of care and its benefits, it's very much patient-centered, because we know that the quality of care improves for a patient if they see the same GP. But that kind of, we haven't really thought about that reversed. So we haven't really thought about what does it mean for a GP to provide continuity of care to see the same patient. And clearly now with like the retention crisis, it's also important that we look at like the positive factors, like what do GPs really enjoy about the career? What were the reasons why they want to become a GP, and how do we kind of protect those things or improve them even more? And I think continuity of care is a very important one there. And I think something we should really, really consider during these policy changes.
And one of the more interesting areas, and maybe one where we can try to make a change or difference in curriculum in medical schools, is those medical school influences that you captured in the literature. And I know, for instance, where I studied, we had really early GP placements in year one of our medical training. But talk us through how medical school influences impacted on career choices and decisions.
Yeah, so medical school is an extremely important time. It's a time that, of course, you go from like knowing about these specialties, knowing about the different career pathways, to actually experiencing them. the most important thing is probably exposure to GP placements. And actually, like, early exposure was associated with a higher likelihood of pursuing a career in a general practice. So it's not only the timing, but it's also the quality, which is kind of hard to measure. But a very important thing there was positive role modeling. So if a medical student during the GP placement is exposed to what they see as a positive role model, then they're more likely to, you know, want to pursue that career as well. And positive role modeling is also, of course, comes down to, you know, how much resources is this GP teacher provided with to facilitate the teaching. So, for instance, a really interesting change is that until 2022, undergraduate GP placements in England received substantially less funding than hospital placements. And right now there's been a change. It's called the Harmonized Undergraduate Medical Tariff, which for the first time has established equal funding for primary care and secondary care, or like the education and placements. And it would be interesting to see whether like improved funding for these GP placements actually also improves the ability of a GP teacher to, you know, give more, maybe more teaching, or to, yeah, to kind of improve the quality of that. I think that's another one, because it's easy to say, oh, it comes down to just a positive role model or not, but I think it all comes down to like the resources they provided with, the time they get, the amount of students they get. And I think, once again, if we set such mandates such as 50% of medical students should become a GP, I think that's the wrong way to go about it. I think it's more, how can we improve the resources for GP teaching and placements such that students have an experience that's like fair and that they enjoy? I think those are the kind of like policy changes we should think about. And I think the harmonized education tariff is a very, very positive step in that direction.
And I guess, are there any other key findings you want to pull out from this paper before we move on to sort of some of the implications and stuff?
I think another one is also the hidden curriculum. And I think that's one that we also kind of, I'm actually like, I don't really have any new like insights on that, but I think it was by choice, not by chance report from 2016 is still as relevant today as it was when it was published. And I think the kind of the policy recommendations from that report are still super important, such as like monitoring and addressing the hidden curriculum, and also supporting GP role models to counter the misconceptions. Those two kind of policy recommendations are still really, really important.
And I guess given what you've found here, what do you think are your recommendations, or what's coming up from the literature about suggestions for how medical students might choose or prioritize general practice as a career choice?
Yeah, I think it comes down to the kind of the two buckets that were also identified by the Bland Mirror framework. One is the individual, which I think, you could also look at the individual and see if you promote more diverse recruitment, then maybe the group or the cohorts of medical students are also more diverse, and maybe that might be helpful with addressing some of the workforce shortages in the future. And I think a very specific thing we should consider there, and that we've learned from a lot of like the US literature, Australian literature, and Canadian literature, is specifically the recruitment of medical students from more deprived rural areas. Because then, according to like the US literature, Canadian literature, and Australian literature, they're more likely to serve in underserved communities. So I think that's the first bucket. The second one is the medical schools. And I've just said, I think funding there is really important for GP teaching, and also like monitoring and addressing the hidden curriculum. And I think the third is like the specialty attributes. So we already talked about continuity of care. That seems to be a very, very important reason why medical students pursue a career in general practice. So I think we should consider protecting that more, improving it more, especially under the changes we get with like prioritizing access over continuity of care.
Brilliant. And it's been really interesting work. And I think that this hopefully will help bolster some of the evidence around how we can increase the recruitment of future GPs into practice. So really important work, and I think it will have lots of strong policy influences sort of in the future going forward. So well done with all this work. But I think that's a great place to wrap things up. So I just wanted to say thanks very much for your time here and for talking about your work.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
And thank you all very much for your time here and for listening to this BJGP podcast. Katharina's original research article can be found on bjgp.org, and the show notes and podcast audio can be found at bjgplife.com. Thanks again for listening, and bye.